Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Okay, you're welcome back. Now, next Wednesday evening, we're hoping to be part of a wider cause to raise some money for a very good cause. We're broadcasting a GAA Intercounty Quiz. It will be hosted no less than by Jim Gavin and Micheál Amirhurtig. Contestants will include Colm Cooper, Paddy Andrews, Kieran Donaghy, Eamon McGee, and it's all in aid of the Dublin Neurological Institute at the Mater Hospital. Now, in a few moments' time, we will chat to Jim and Micheál. But first, to tell us a bit more, we have Professor Tim Lynch, Director of the Dublin Neurological Institute at the Mater. Tim, you can hear me there?
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Very well. So tell us all.
So we're at the Centre of Brain Health. DNI at the Mater here is a charity. We think we're a centre of excellence to look after people with neurological problems, meaning basically brain, spine, nerve and muscle disorders. And if you think about that, that's pretty common. So that will range from people with stroke, epilepsy, head trauma, concussion, migraine, Alzheimer's disease, dementia, Parkinson's disease, etc. So you add all that together, you have about 700,000 people or so in Ireland with brain and spine problems, etc. And the problem is often getting access to diagnosis and care. As a charity, we try and provide the best care possible with that, using basically fundraising we do over the year to support our services. Fortunately, this year, like everybody else, the COVID-19 and pandemic managed to torpedo a lot of our fundraising efforts. So we're in a bit of a bind that way. So this little idea came up about doing a quiz, and we managed to avail of Micheál, August, Jim as quiz masters. And the idea is that we were trying to do some fundraising for the Neurology Institute to look after people with brain disorders. And that'll be done with a bit of crack, I suppose, as you outline, I'm sure, in detail, Joe. But also that we would have a raffle done. And the raffle, of course, is Jim. So we decided to borrow Jim and the raffling Jim off. And he'd be doing a training session for a team. People would buy tickets for the raffle, and whoever wins that, they have a training session with him for a number of hours. Including with that, there's a number of goodies that he's managed to get for us, including bibs, jerseys, footballs, and cones for the training session. And secondly, we're going to have a GoFundMe page with the text coming in at the time of the quiz for people that want to donate and help our cause here at the Neurology Institute, try and improve care for people across the board. We're very welcome to that. I should say the Institute kind of does this in multiple ways. It's not just a clinical service. So, for example, in our Georgian building here, which we renovated about 15 years ago at this stage, just opposite the Mater, we've got outpatients and we see about 6,000 to 7,000 people per year and try and see as many as we possibly can. And during the COVID pandemic, we went all virtual, and bizarrely, actually, we saw more people by that means than we were seeing them physically. So we figured out we should be doing a combination of both. And secondly, we have a day ward here, so we get people coming for various treatments and therapies up to about 1,000 per year. But thirdly, we do a lot of teaching and we do research and innovation into brain and mind disorders, so trying to both the public to understand these disorders more and indeed understand how our brain works, but also to drive new innovations and new therapies into these various disorders.
Very good. Well, listen, we're happy to help a cause like that. So the GoFundMe page is GoFundMe/Jim-Gavin. GoFundMe/Jim-Gavin. And that's where people can make donations, big or small, and where you can win that training session with Jim Gavin for your club. That's the anything else, Tim? Any other message you want to get, or that's the main call to action?
That's the main thing, I think. Right. I mean, it's trying to capture, covered most of the bases from your viewpoint.
Okay, excellent. Well, listen, good to have you with us. Hopefully we'll raise a huge sum of money and keep up the good work. Professor Tim Lynch, thanks so much for the time being, Tim.
Thanks, Joe.
Cheers. We're going to catch up with Jim Gavin, that is, and Micheál Amirhurtig in just 1 second. Okay, so we have a very worthy cause we want to tell you about. We're part of raising money for it next Wednesday. We're going to be hosting a GAA Intercounty Quiz, and the hosts on the night will be Jim Gavin and Micheála Mar Hirtig. We will have Colm Cooper as a contestant, Paddy Andrews, Kieran Donaghy, Eamon McGee. And we were speaking just a few moments ago with Professor Tim Lynch. He's director of the Dublin Neurological Institute at the Mater Hospital. And it is very much in aid of the Dublin Neurological Institute. And Tim was telling us, like so many places, their fundraising this year has been torpedoed by the COVID crisis. So it's for an excellent cause. And the prize is rather good as well. Jim Gavin, who knows a thing or two about football, will come to your local club and give a training session. So he'll give up his time, give a few hours over and conduct a training session at your club. To enter, to be a part of this raffle, then go on to the GoFundMe page. So it's GoFundMe/Jim-Gavin. GoFundMe/Jim-Gavin. Donate big or small, anything. You know, it's generally that the more people giving small donations tends to trump one-off big donations here. So get involved. And as well as raising some money for a very good cause, you could win a training session for your club with Jim Gavin. And to that end, let's welcome in our prospective quiz masters, Jim Gavin and Micheála Mar Hirtig. Gentlemen, can you hear me there? You're okay?
We can indeed, yes.
Hi, Joe.
Excellent. Okay, well, listen, it's great to have you with us. You need no introductions, but I'll give you one anyway. Micheála Mar Hirtig, a legendary broadcaster, clearly, did his first audition for RTE in 1949. Which is worth thinking about for a minute. So 1949, and had a stunning broadcasting career across six decades. And then Jim Gavin, the player, All-Ireland winner in 95, National League winner as well, three Leinster titles. And then as manager, six All-Irelands, five National Leagues and seven Leinster titles, amongst other things. And freedom of the city as well, Jim. I don't know, have you brought the sheep out grazing of late?
I haven't, no, but I have the bone arrow at the back, so I've been practicing a lot with that over the last while.
Good man. Well, listen, great to have you with us. And Micheál, can I wish you early congratulations? You turn 90 next month, is it?
Well, not for a good while yet. August is a long way away.
It is, of course, yeah. So how have you spent your time cocooning over the last couple of months, Micheál?
Well, out in the air as much as I can, even though I haven't gone outside the gate, except maybe four times calling in to see somebody in the Mater. And other than that, I'm inside the gate since the month of March. But I've been lucky. The weather was great and we were having fun. The garden is reasonably big, so we could walk around there for as long as we liked. And so, in a way, I'm enjoying it, but the freedom is missing. First time ever I was locked inside gates for long periods. It's a long time since March started, but it's going well all over the country and delighted to see that. And tomorrow, I always believe tomorrow is going to be better than today.
Are you a natural optimist, Micheál, or do you work on that attitude?
Well, I think I am. It's a good way to be. You know, you're looking forward to something. You believe it will happen. And if it doesn't happen, you can say, well, now it was meant for tomorrow, really. Tomorrow is there all the time, looking forward to it. And I enjoy looking forward to sports games to come and different ways of doing things, interests I have. I like to look forward more than looking back. Looking back to see what we have learned from it, but going ahead all the time, looking for new ventures, new ideas, and better things to come, I hope.
Jim, if we can all be like that in our 90th year, I think we'll be doing okay.
Yeah, it's great advice by Micheál. You know, it's been you know, very difficult for people of Micheál's generation with the cocooning. But you know, I think it's important that we keep shielding those people who not so much Micheál. Micheál looks. We had a brief chat on last Saturday, and he looks very healthy and fit and. Please God, I'm that healthy and fit when I reach his elder years. But you know, it's important that we still you know shield you know the people who probably are vulnerable to the virus. And I think there's been fantastic solidarity shown throughout the island of Ireland in the main, and long may that continue.
Jim, what has it meant for your world? Obviously, the aviation industry in the main seems to have gone into hibernation, lockdown. It's been devastating. Have you been busier with any extra work, or has it been a very quiet period?
It's actually been very busy for my side of the company I work in is the Irish Aviation Authority. We provide the air traffic service on one side of the company for Cork, Dublin and Shannon, and for all the en route traffic that passes over our sovereign airspace, and indeed the biggest block of oceanic airspace. There's nearly 500,000 square kilometres out off the west coast of Clare and Mayo, that 90% of the traffic that would normally come from North America into mainland Europe and the Middle East will go through that traffic, through that block of airspace. Obviously, that has been that's down to probably 90%, 95% of what it was last year. And indeed, the local traffic obviously is very much down as well in terms of air traffic. My particular role on the safety regulation side, we have oversight of the civil aviation system. So that's from ballooning to airlines to drones. And but it has been quite busy, you know, helping the industry manage from you know, pilot licensing to engineer licensing, the challenge that the industry has had that they can't get together, and now they're beginning to open up, and we've been liaising quite closely with the European Safety Aviation Agency and indeed the European Commission in and the European Central Disease Control Centre. To try and help the airlines get back on their feet. But obviously there's local restrictions still in place in Ireland.
Sure.
But in mainland Europe, I saw forecasts and reports today on some meetings that, you know, the traffic levels are beginning to increase and quite a lot of movement, particularly from Germany down to Spain. Charles de Gaulle is very busy today. So slowly but surely the industry is getting back on its feet.
So it's not the first year post being Dublin manager that you would have planned on. I think all our plans have gone up in smoke a little bit. The decision to call it a day, can you tell us about that? Can you tell us when you made up your mind definitively? Because I'm sure you maybe oscillated back and forth and, you know, the weigh up the pros and cons of a decision. When and how did you finally reach a decision? Yeah, it's the right time to go.
Well, ultimately, what it was about, Joe, was what was best for the football team. And a bit like what Micheál said there, I don't normally look back on the landscape or what we've travelled through. So I hadn't in the previous years never looked back. But after this year's campaign, you know, I've been on the road for myself for 12 years on the spin. I took over the Dublin under 21 role back in the winter of 2007. So it's been a fantastic journey. I've been on, I've met some fantastic players, great friends, great management teams and coaches. So there's a number of factors, obviously, in the sector that I have a profession. We all volunteer our time for the GAA. And that's always important to emphasize. So we all have careers outside of the GAA, and it's a choice that we make. But if I'm going to be in that role, you know, I'm going to give my best. And if I can't give him my best, you know, I need to hand that baton on to somebody else. Because all my role really was to try and make it as to burn as brightly as I could when I held that torch.
Yes.
And so I have, you know, a busy job in the aviation sector. I have a young family that I have grown up and probably haven't been around for a lot of their development years. And then in terms of what's best for the team, they've been listening to me talking an awful lot. Some of them for the guts of that 12 years, like Philly McMahon would have been my first captain back in 2008 and his vintage. And then as recent as the likes of maybe Owen Merchant and Conor Callaghan, who I've only had the pleasure of working over the last number of years. But, you know, when I put it all in the mix, I thought what was best for the team was that, and that was always at the forefront of my mind, was to hand the baton on, and I'm glad that I gave I gave the ship back in reasonable condition. It obviously needs, it's up and dry dock now, and needs a new lick of paint, maybe some crew, new crew members. But I was involved in enough teams down through the years with Dublin when I was with them for 10 seasons to see the chaos that a change of management can occur if it's not handled well. So it was obviously that there was a massive disappointment. I leave behind some great friends, but some great memories at the same time.
Yes, so it's a complicated picture. It's not necessarily one thing or the other. You know, when you met with the players and gave them the news, and a few of them have spoken in different quarters, and I said it was very sad. It's the end of an era, end of your journey together. How did you feel driving home in the car after that meeting?
Absolutely, very sad. It was a very emotional for me, I have to say, to let the players know. there was obviously a great connection had built up. And we had been on the road for those 7 years. In I think Oldham, we went kind of back. We went to either to August to an All Ireland semi final, or indeed to the All Ireland final. Then after the All Ireland final, there's a lot of events on. You're fundraising for a holiday. You come to Christmas, you go on a holiday, then you're back on the bike again, getting ready for National Football League. So happens, it was pretty much 12 months on the spin every year. So we had some great connections with the players and my coaching team and the selectors and management team. It was very hard. Not so much hard to let go, but very emotional to say goodbye, because it is a clean break, and it had to be, because the players need to, and have been in that position before. In some ways, one king is dead and long live the next king who comes in. So I'm very conscious of trying to make that clean cut. So, yeah, it was difficult, but it had to be done.
Mm. Micheál, you're as well placed as anyone to put into context just how brilliant this Jim Gavin Dublin team have been. I know he'll bristle at me calling it the Jim Gavin Dublin team, so I'll just call it the Dublin team. But you've seen a fair few great teams in your day, Micheál, and this Dublin team are right up there.
They're right up there. Well, any team that goes and wins 5 All-Irelands in a row, never happened before. The 4-0 happened when Wexford did it the first time ever, 1915 to 18. Then Kerry did it twice. They did it in 32 backwards. That was 4. And then the other 4 when they were going for 5 in a row. It didn't happen. That's the way it goes. You keep looking forward to the next. But things are changing. Now, Jim Gavin is the only manager, trainer, or whatever you like to call him, that managed 5 teams in a row. No manager ever did that before. So great credit is due to him. He did an awful lot of it quietly. Thinking. He was a thinking man. He thought on the way to the training, going home. And then, after making 5 in a row, he said, it's time to give some other county or some other team in Dublin with a new trainer or manager, give them a chance. Again, we're all looking forward to it. This is a different year. Straight knockout. The final will be played on the 19th of December. Now, many finals were played outside of maybe September, November in our time, but quite a few finals were played in the December years. 1919, I think 2 finals were played there. So it was nothing strange. Nothing strange. It did happen before that the All-Ireland football final will be played on the 19th of December this year. Christmas will be coming late for people that started to move into the Christmas spirit earlier. It will be great to look forward to it, and it's great that we have it to look forward to. Same with the hurling. The hurling final will be played in December as well. So we've a lot to look forward to. Now, I know for a good number of years going back now, managers did not reveal teams until maybe the 2 days before the big match coming up. We are breaking with tradition this time. I am going to announce now the teams that will take part in this famous quiz along the west coast of Ireland. And the west coast is very well represented in this very fun night that we'll have. Now, we'll begin with Donegal because they're a long way from a lot of places. Neely Gallagher and Eamon McGee, they'll be representing Donegal in this famous quiz. We'll come back down to Dublin then, and Mossy Quinn, a former player and a current player, Paddy Andrews, they'll be there for Dublin, answering the difficult questions that we'd make sound easy, Anya, Jim and I. On to Mayo in the West. Mayo deserve an All-Ireland of some sort. They deserve to win a quiz to start the whole thing off. What a team. Aidan O'Shea and Cora Staunton. And then down to Kerry. A weak-looking selection, really. Gooch Cooper and Kieran Donaghy. Their average height is 6'3". So they'll be the strongest team physically there, but will they have it in the brain? We don't know. We'll look forward to it. We'll have great fun, and we'll have stories to tell sometime between the start and the finish of that great night next week. And next week isn't far away.
It's not. And again, the GoFundMe page is GoFundMe/ Jim-Gavin, and it's all for the Dublin Neurological Institute. Jim, can I put you on the spot here? And I know you came up against the same counties on various years, so give me a year as well if you can What was the best team, the best 15, 25 on a given day that you came up against?
Ooh. Yeah, really good question. You'd have to say that this year, the Kerry team obviously impressed us over both games. And, you know, we put for a bounce of a ball. They might have got away with the victory in the first or Ireland last year. Mayo definitely bent me over the expanse of my time. Those 7 years were probably the most consistent team. And what a superb group of players. And, you know, I think you could dot up any of the games, particularly 17. It was so close. So that particular group, you know, I've huge admiration for them. They're exemplary gentlemen. They really represent Mayo so well. And they're just really good footballers and play the game the way I'd like to see be played as well. So they were probably, over the expanse of those 7 years, were probably the most consistent team. But like some of the games we had against Tyrone were fabulous. So it's probably be, you know, we obviously met a great Donegal team in 14 as well. But probably overall, Mayo were probably the most consistent team that I met.
Did that Donegal defeat have as much of an impact on you as, you know, it's talked about generally, that we saw a less cavalier Dublin, or certainly a Dublin more conscious of shoring up the back and not being susceptible to the kind of goals Donegal scored that day. Is that true? That had a big effect on your thinking and that maybe changed your outlook a touch, or is it overstated?
I think that if you looked forensically at the style of the Dublin team, each of the seven campaigns that I had with them, it always changed. There was always things that were added and taken away. If you looked the way we played, certainly in some parts of the Ireland series, including the Ireland final this year, it would have been very similar to the model we used in 2014, a full court press, really aggressive attacking football. There's obviously risk and reward going against a team like Kerry. You know, you do leave yourself exposed at the back to some of their counter-attacking. But that's, you know, that was a calculated risk that we took. Mm. So I think if you look throughout the expanse of those seven seasons, you'll see little pits of each year blended in. But the reality of it is, you know, we played in the previous season, 13, you know, we played, you know, that Ireland final, Mayo, Morris went man-to-man with us, and it was a fantastic game. And as the years progressed, you know, teams began to play a more compact defence against us, you know, a blend of zone defence and man-to-man, which meant we had to be a little bit more controlled about it, because they just wanted to exploit the space that we might leave behind. So certainly it was a rich environment for learning, that's for sure. Mm. That's the only time we'd ever probably look back is, and I've only picked this up from, you know, aviation, commercial transport is probably the most safest form of transport that we can have, because it learns from its lessons. And I just picked up those little tricks along the way and those little tips with aviation that I transferred to the football team. So we've always looked back and tried to learn. And obviously there was a huge learning from that particular game. But in all the campaigns that we had and all the games that we played, we used that same review process, you know, methodically. Yeah. And that allowed us to, you know, keep what we're doing really well. And then to add little layers of it. So I think by the end of my 7 years of them, we were probably using little components, statical components that we would have used in all of the years. Mm.
It felt by the end of your tenure, and please like disagree with this, but it just looking in from the outside, it felt like by the end of your tenure, your Dublin team had become very comfortable dealing with a compact defence sitting back. You know, that you had players out wide and you moved the ball really well and you stayed patient, and it was a picture it seemed that the players were comfortable with and knew how to break down. It was more teams who went at you, went man for man, you know, took a few risks that caused, one, well, better games to watch, but two, caused you more problems. As a manager and as a group, what approach did you find most tricky to deal with?
Well, they both have their unique challenges. Like if you play against, a team like Kerry that have outstanding forwards, like they're going to score, they're going to get points on the board. It's what are you going to do down the far end? And similarly, if you play against a team that likes to play in the counter-attack, have a compact defence and break out on numbers, that poses a challenge as well. And both need to be, obviously, from an attacking perspective, they present different problems as well to break them down. So I wouldn't say that one what causes would have had, and I'm obviously speaking of the past tense, would have caused us any more problems than the other set where a team might go simply man to man. But there's very few teams that we played would allow us to go man to man with their six backs. And including last year's final, you saw Paul Murphy obviously playing out of the slot there as extra cover. So the game has really evolved, and when you see the work of the standing committee there for the rule change, and that's a big factor as well, I think, in the championship that we just referenced briefly. That'll have a huge bearing on in the competition, and maybe certainly our semi-final against Mayo and the final two games might have the trend they were looking for was more one-to-one contests, more and a more aesthetically pleasing game is what I picked up from them. I don't think you could argue with the quality of football in both semi-finals and in the two final games. So maybe their hypothesis that they presented to the GA members is null and void. But nonetheless, we have the rules now, and we just need to get on with it.
Now, it possibly felt like the game's going that way on its own. It didn't need to push along. Michal, I'll bring you in 1 second. Just one other question to put to you, Jim. What was the toughest decision or the decision you agonised over the most in your tenure?
Well, I don't tend to agonise. Just give you context. Is that tactically? Is it?
I'm keeping it deliberately open. Be that having to call a player up and say you're done and drop him, or be that, what decision toughest? You interpret it whatever way you want. What jumps to mind?
Yeah, well, but like tactically, decisions that you make, we do have a kind of collaborative approach. Obviously, the buck stops with me, and if it goes great, the players get the credit, and if it doesn't go, one needs to take the hit. So I never dwelled over those.
Yeah.
The hardest part I found of the role was letting players know that they weren't traveling on the bus on match day. I'd only bring the 26, and you had another maybe four, maybe six players. We didn't carry too large of a squad, but to let those players know that they weren't traveling, I always found it difficult, be it 21s or seniors, because they put in as much effort as the rest of it. The teams were really about the sum of their parts, and that's the most difficult and challenging bit that I found, was breaking the news to them. That was not a nice message to be given, and I never got good at it. I always struggled with it. But in fair credit to the players, without exception, they were disappointed. But they all, after that initial, I suppose, shock or the emotion of it, they rolled their sleeves and they didn't blink, and that's probably why the team had the success that they had, because the players on the pitch knew that they were representing obviously their county and their clubs, but the guys who probably didn't travel, that meant a lot to the team, that team ethic,
Yeah, and would you try and deliver that news bluntly, quickly, let's just rip this band-aid off, or would you, meet for 20
minutes? Depends, really. You could be dashing from work, Joe, and you gotta bring a guy on the phone to let him know. You might get the training early and bring him into the office and get breaking the news. It varied, depending on the players, sometimes the relationships obviously build up over the years as you go through the various campaigns with players. That was always difficult. So there is not one size fits all. It's the most difficult part of the job, I found.
Yes, I'm sure you don't miss that. Michal, unfortunately, one player we won't see in the championship later on this year is Jack McCaffrey. For his own reasons, he's stepping away. Dublin won't find it easy to replace him.
Well, people have stepped away in the past and they came again that year. I wouldn't rule him out appearing sometime this coming year as well. A fantastic footballer, as was Noel McCaffrey, the father. I know the grandfather, Mick McCaffrey. He was a good Monaghan man, played with Monaghan, used to play with Clonagail. You'd never know, but he might be back. Never say something is definitely. Now, one thing I'd like to say, there's always a connection between a Dublin manager and somebody from another county. Jim's father is a Clare man. Kevin Heffernan's father was an Offaly man, and he was a member of the first team of Gardaí that appeared in Ireland. He was there, but Kevin Heffernan, He was the man, I think, really, that set up Dublin football as it is today. When they started with Vincent's, they won an All-Ireland League with 14 Vincent players and one player, the goalkeeper from Erco. They did that more than once. So they built up a team of Dubliners, but maybe half Dubliners managing them. The current, of course, we all know that Jim's father came from Clare and he loves Clare, Jim. Desi Farrell is the current manager. I remember Desi when he was a minor. His mother is from Donegal. Met her on a few occasions. We spoke nothing but Gaelge. Be Gaelge, Tir Connolly, Kishul, be Gaelge, Kirigum, so as to be spoke to them. Desi will have a leaning towards Donegal, but he'll be out to beat them whenever Dublin and Donegal. So there's lots of things to look forward to. And I think next Wednesday night now, we'll have plenty of time to talk about lots of things. Four great teams. There's no doubt about it, the West is well catered for, will be well catered for next week. Make sure you listen to us. You'll learn.
They will. Oh. I see your memory's intact. Bloody hell.
Until somebody asks you, are you sure?
Oh, dear. Jim, can I ask you, I saw a quote from Declan Darcy, and he was talking about the role management took on, you know, amidst all the success. And he said, our rationale was the players are number one. After a game, we didn't want to be seen jumping around Croke Park. It wasn't our day. We've had our day in the sun playing football. And management take a step back on game day. That was his sense of how you did things. And like you kind of almost, it's from a caricature, you're loath to take any of the limelight. It's very, very hard to find a photo of you with Sam Maguire. Conscious or otherwise, and the way you dealt with media, you know, for instance, Jose Mourinho would say he would, in the media, when he's talking on media, 90% of it, it's what he's saying, he's getting a message to his own players. Maybe the other 10% might be the opposition or referees. What your perspective on how you conducted yourself, be it full time, be it in the media, be it not parading with Sam Maguire the way lots of other coaches would very reasonably do. It's not a critique of them. I suspect this is an approach you thought about. Can you, now that you're a little bit away from being Dublin manager, can you give us your perspective on how you handled that side of the job?
Yeah, Declan is spot on there. That's our whole focus, was the players. It's a, you know, I had a very player centric approach during my 12 years with the 21s and the senior football team, and I suppose when I was interviewed for the job back in, what was it, 2012, you know, I didn't give any guarantees of trophies. All I said is that I would, you know, do my very best to get those Dublin players to be their very best, both individually and collectively. So that was always my focus. And anything that I believed might take away from that, just wasn't interested. We didn't have time. We know we do. You know, Gaelic football teams and hurling teams, camogie teams will try to have a professional approach. But the reality of it is that they're not professionals. They all have to work. Unlike a soccer player, rugby player, you know, they'll be paid not to work. So what I mean by that is at 1:30, 2:00, you'll see the professional Munster rugby player heading home in his car to go to bed, you know, while the GA player is still probably in the office or in college. So time was limited for what I had. Obviously, I said I had a busy job as well, and still do. So my focus was on purely what I could influence, and anything that would take my distraction from getting the team to be their best, I just wasn't really interested in it. So obviously, there's, you know, the media play a huge role for Gaelic games, and we're very lucky to have such a big broad engagement with all forms of media to promote our games. But you know, my focus was on getting that team to prepare to perform to its best. You know, I never had to mention winning a game or winning a trophy once in all those 12 years. It was all about trying to execute a performance, and that's all I was ever focused in on. So that would have influenced how I approached the outside world, I suppose, as opposed to the players, as Declan referenced.
I suspect you weren't shocked when you saw Jack McCaffrey's decision to step away. I mean, you know how it feels like for Jack McCaffrey to say he's going to take a year out. I never got the impression from him that you tried to talk him around back in, was it 16? You know, footballer of the year, I'm sure. Big part of you wanted to keep him. Your thoughts on his decision and the loss he'll be for Dublin?
Yeah, like it's not a manager's role to talk player in and out of anything. They all volunteer their time and their life, as we always said, it's defined by the choice that they make. And if they can commit to representing their county as best they can, obviously there's a self-sacrifice and there's a price to be paid. Mm. That's just the reality of it. And I mean that in terms of maybe the social aspect of not being able to, you know, if they're going to train on a Saturday morning. You know, recovery is such a big part of high performance sport that they need to get a good night's rest and they can't be maybe out socializing with their friends. So that's really important. And obviously their careers as well. We place huge emphasis on players developing their careers, players, you know, academically doing well, because they really are two, you know, glass balls, to use that analogy, that can't break. The one that will always come back to you, and we all said it there, was that, you know, sometimes players will step away for career development, for academic purposes or something else. But the sport will always be there. The GAO will always be there for any player that needs to take a step back from inter-county. And, you know, the community and the club is the bedrock of our association. And we're going to see some fantastic championship games throughout the length and breadth of the island over the next coming weeks. So I'm sure we'll see Jack doing really well there.
Yeah, hopefully. On the general controversy over the last couple of weeks, without going through it in depth, but, you know, initially no training until the 14th, but then the GAA said they wouldn't impose sanctions, and a number of people, you know, the likes of Michael Dignan in Offaly, said it was, you know, crazy, you're either imposing sanctions or you're not, and then the GAA said they would impose sanctions. What have you made of the whole situation? Do you think it was unfair to not let players get involved with inter-county before September 14th? Is that asking a bit much for county managers, or were you happy to see that space created for club and a fairly clear-cut line in the sand? Give us your take on the situation.
Yeah, certainly. I can only probably speak from the Dublin perspective. So yeah. Certainly, if you look at the last 3 years, you know, during the April club activity season, club activity block for those, you know, five, depends when you're knocked out, obviously, the National Football League. But for those five maybe weeks, you didn't have access to players. And that's, you know, the players do need a break from the inter-county setup as well because of the attention that it requires from them. So the last 2 years, we only had 4 weeks to prepare the team coming out of that particular block of championship game, club games. In 17, we had 3 weeks because of the April setup wasn't there, so the county board got Dublin County Board got two rounds of the hurling and football championships in, and with 3 weeks then to prepare, I think it was Carlow back in 17, I think, for that particular game. So, like, 4 weeks is enough, I suppose, where the confusion probably her hose and best intentions. And I think the GAA have done a fantastic job in terms of their COVID-19 return to play protocols. I've been very, very impressed with the leadership shown. We're up there with the even professional sport. It's been very impressive, and I see that with my son's club, how they're managing it. It's been really good. But the confusion probably arose, Joe, in terms of the club activity finished on the 11th of October. Then you had a week to go to the opening round of the National Football League, with some teams having, like Donegal and Wexford and Wicklow and Tyrone, you know, have three weekends in the spin, which is obviously doable. We do it in the National Football League, but that preparation time you need has been probably, that's where the confusion arose. So I understand why county managers might want to get access to the players. Mm. And I think you'll see, though, over the coming weeks that players will remain with their clubs until they exit. The challenge, obviously, is that some counties are exiting earlier. So, for example, Mayo, I know, Tyrone, Dublin have their championships finishing around the 19th, I think. You've other teams like Carlow, that county are going out to the 11th of October with the county championship, and there's some teams in between, but I think the average is probably the 26th, 27th of September when most counties will conclude their I'm talking about football now, their football championships. Mm. So everybody isn't on the start line at the same time, and I think that was probably the intent. If they go through this again in terms of next year's season, they probably just need to draw a line in terms of give a 2-week window to say this is when we finish our club championships, So one team, if it's starting a week early, that's not too bad. But I think, you know, a really important session for the for some teams will probably be the 10th, 11th of October, that weekend before the commencement of that campaign. You know, because teams will either have three games, the two in the National League and the Championship game, or they'll have seven over 10 weeks if they get all the way to the All-Ireland final. So that weekend is going to be very, very important for them. So they're going to have all the a lot of the work done. But you know what? You push a lot of it back on your fitness and your athletic development coach. He should have the guys in tip-top shape. They don't need to be get together to be running around fields, you know. So I'd expect that most players will come back from their clubs to the counties in, you know, pretty, pretty good condition, a little bit of top-up. And in terms of, you know, we're talking about here about the Dublin Neurological Institute, what fascinated me with Professor Lynch and his team, as I was invited to a fundraiser along with Micheál and Ted Walsh a number of years ago, and I heard Professor Lynch talking about, you know, the science of neurology and the mind, and that's as somebody who lectures in human performance and aviation, I'm fascinated with how the mind works, and you know, the D&I provide a fantastic service. So you know, I think the challenge will be for us and get the players back is to work on that mindset in terms of that high performance mindset as they roll into the championship and that training which is at intercounty, which is up another little level from senior county from club football. That really is important as well. So you know, you can understand why club managers want to get them. They don't need to get them for the full summer, but you know, certainly a three week and a week block is important, because the last week is ready to work done before the campaign starts. Yeah, there's lots of lessons learned, but I think best intent for the GAA, and I suppose what will be interesting now is whether they shift on that 14th of September line of the sand.
Micheál, in broad terms, Micheál, you've been obviously around the game a long time. The club player has never felt more frustrated than now. And the CPA and Liam Griffin and these guys have been around trying to do something about it. Do you feel like we're reaching a bit of a tipping point where something radical will happen, or what's your read on the club v county tension, which is at probably its greatest now?
Well, I think the year ahead, it gives time for reflection. Is it time to change this thing or another thing? Now, we've spoken a lot and listened a lot about training tonight. Training didn't really start maybe until the 50s. I know that Kerry never trained for any game except an All-Ireland final until 1951. They broke a tradition there. They trained for the semi-final, just three evenings, 1 week. But it has spread all over the country, and it's good to see the levels of fitness they have today. But the older players, they had good levels of fitness, because in those days, very few people had motor cars. They were either walking or cycling. There were lots of manual jobs that time. They were strong physically, and they didn't require as much training as in latter years. So everything keeps changing. That's for the better nearly always, but it is a new thing. Didn't start really until 1915. People thought it was a crazy thing, bringing people together. Should they know how to play football? They did, but times change and they're still changing. We'll see a lot of changes in the future as well, according to the day.
Yeah, well, hopefully they can get it sorted out. Jim, briefly, because I want to let you guys go. You've been on for long enough. Your sense of, you know, the club players' lot at the moment. I know you're a club man at heart as well, and you've been in the inter-county manager, and you've wanted to prepare as best you can, and I'm sure your Dublin team wanted to prepare as best they can. Is there a solution here that's going to suit all parties, or is there just always going to be this issue, this thorny issue?
Well, I think it's definitely evolving, and it's probably coming to a head. I think one thing that this year is showing is that you know, you can play, you know, seven intercounty, you know, highly competitive intercounty games for those teams who obviously go from the start of the two National League games, go all the way to the 19th of December. That seven games at that particular intensity can be played over 10 weeks. So that might inform, you know, the CCCC in terms of how they view the landscape in the future. The National League has been a fantastic competition. It is really, I think, from my playing days when we went back after an All-Ireland campaign, or you'd probably start the National League in October, November, and there wouldn't be that much emphasis prior to Christmas, and then afterwards a bit of work in the new year. The National Football Leagues have really, the last number of years, have been really highly competitive, and you know, there's enough talk about, you know, competitive balance. I think there's great games in Division 4, Division 3, Division 2, because teams are playing at their level. So that should inform as well in terms of how the competitions in the future should be structured and whether we need a National Football League. I would still be advocating the provincial competitions. You know, I'd be a huge traditionalist, and I would have always valued that Dublin team doing well in Leinster. But I think when you look, Joe, at the and I'll finish on this, at some of the games, particularly Division 3, Division 4 games in the Championship, like there's 16 teams that are there, and there's some cracking games. You look at Carlow Offaly, Longford Loud, Waterford Limerick, Wexford Wicklow. Those are teams that are competing at their competitive level. You step it down even to the next tier, Derry Division 2 team playing Armagh, down Division 3, should I say, playing Fermanagh, Tipperclare, again, Division 2 teams playing Division 3 teams. Not much within those, you know, it's very hard to call those how those games will go. But when you step it down to a Division 4 team playing the Division 1 team, and indeed a Division 2 team, so you have the likes of Antrim against the winners of Monaghan, Cavan, Sligo against Galway, London against Roscommon, they're just really difficult games for those Division 4 teams. Obviously, and it's funny to be talking about, or strange to be talking about Cork as a Division 3 team, but obviously the tie of that particular grouping of 16 is the Cork Kerry game, and that'll be a fascinating game on the 7th of November. But the point I want to make is I think that we missed a little bit of a trick in terms of, it's great to see the Joe McDonagh Cup being played on the day of the All-Ireland Hurling Final. And you've got, you know, Kerry Meath and other counties and Antrim involved in that. And the pride that those counties who get to that competition, to the Joe McDonagh Final, what they will feel will be great. You know, the Cushta Bannisty is still, you know, they still have emergency powers up to the 27th of August. And you'd love to see them, you know, looking at those Division 3, Division 4 teams. If there's six, there'll be 16 of them come probably the 7th of November, Monday the 9th of November. That's their season over with. Wouldn't it be great to put those teams back into an open draw? You've got 16 teams, a quarterfinal, a semi-final, and a final before the and you can call it the Talent Cup. I saw Sean Moore in the Irish Times reference that today. You can call it the 1920 Cup to commemorate. We'll be commemorating that on the 21st of November this year, the massacre in Croke Park. Call it what you want, but you can have a fantastic occasion of Gaelic football representing counties from who are at their competitive level. And the pride, again, that would bring to those counties who mightn't have the competitive... to be competitive against Division 2 or Division 1 teams. Yeah. But to give them a chance at their own level on our Ireland final day.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Gents, I've taken up more than enough of your time. So, Micheál, next Wednesday, the quiz kicks off. You've given the teams. It's all for the Dublin Neurological Institute to raise money. People can go on to the GoFundMe /, Jim-Gavin to give a few quid. And Jim Gavin will turn up and do a training session, much like you did, Micheál, with the Kerry footballers up in Dublin all those years ago. Am I right in saying you and Jack O'Shea would then hit golf balls after training to see, have a little long drive competition after the training sessions?
Yeah, looking to the future. He's quite a good golfer now. It started when he started on the Kerry team. Just very small thing at the end of the game. One shot, it had to be a good one. And it worked. I believed always that there should be a bit of fun in training as well as, you know, sincerity to what are we aiming at. I enjoy the training, and players do, really. They look forward to it, and they miss it when they give up. But there's always good days coming. Lacoon of Day next Wednesday now, we'll have a bit of fun. Somebody will win, and some team will have Jim Gavin going to coach them. I'll be there to look on to see has Jim lost any of the touch since he went away from football. So great thing to look forward to. Gurmila Mahagud, for having us here this evening.
Thank you. Micheál Muirchertach and Jim Gavin. Lads, we'll talk to you next Wednesday. Thanks so much. Much appreciated.
Thanks for support, Joe. It's long.